Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Each week, we tackle a different issue that's uniquely Portland. So tune in every Saturday to hear a new episode complete with interviews and editorial that helps explain our city. From Portland's leading paper comes a brand new way to engage with the news, sports, arts, and culture. Stick around. February 13th, this is the Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. On behalf of myself and the entire Willamette Week news team, thank you so much for tuning in. It's the day before Valentine's Day, or maybe you're listening to this after Valentine's Day or on Valentine's Day, in which case, I hope your week was good. My week has been very good. I've been excited about today's show. We start off with a 90-second news flash, but after that, we do something a little different today. Rather than talking about the cover story, we are airing an interview with the mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler. Of course, we got to end with the quote of the week. There would be revolts if we didn't, so got to get the people what they want. So anyways, great show for you coming up, but first, the 90-second news flash. Folks, I record this show on Thursdays, so as of today, there is a winter storm warning. Experts expect there to be 10 inches of snow in Portland. Now, I'm a big fan of snow, so by the time this airs, we'll know if the experts are right or if Hank is very upset at some people. If there is snow, come join us for a little sledding sesh at Forest Heights. Should be fun. It's cold out there, which means trouble for homeless people, something we'll talk about later on in the show. But two homeless people have died in recent weeks after trying to warm themselves up with fire. That's very sad. Pioneer Place is looking for a security measure that is more permanent than the wood boards over windows that we see today. They are asking the city for $500,000 for new gates and window protection. Last week, we talked about the prison population getting the vaccine, but state officials expect 45% of prisoners to reject the vaccine. The battle between teachers and parents about when kids and teachers can resume in-person courses continue. Parents want their kids back in school, but the teachers' union is saying not so fast. Even if all teachers are vaccinated, they still don't plan on going back anytime soon for safety reasons, which honestly is pretty incredible on the part of the teachers' union. Now, I'm not even pretending to be an expert at this issue. I know very little. I'm just reading some headlines a couple days a week, but this process has made me realize that maybe podcasters ought to unionize. I'm just the strength of the teachers union shows me that. I don't know what we'd fight for, but we'll think of something. I'll let you know next week what my platform is, but I'm running for president of the podcasting union in Portland, Oregon. So get ready. Campaign launches today. Pretty painless. 90-second news flash. On to the real stuff. Now, on to the main event. What follows is my interview with Mayor Ted Wheeler. The main topic of the interview was the homelessness crisis. We also discussed COVID and other pressing issues. It's important to note that this interview was conducted in December. Since then, a few big stories have taken place. The main story involving the mayor these past few weeks was that he was accosted by two people in public, resulting in him getting struck once and then later pepper spraying a man who was yelling at him. That obviously isn't in the interview. I don't have a crystal ball. I couldn't foresee that, but a lot of other timely topics made it in, so give it a listen, and we kick it off with this. When you ran for mayor 4 years ago, you made homelessness one of your top priorities. Let's reflect. What worked, what didn't?
Well, first of all, in terms of what went right, the partnerships that we've developed, not just working as a city, but also working in combination with Multnomah County, working in combination with service providers, working with neighborhoods, the recent alliance we have with the Metro Regional Government, these types of relationships have proven to be critically important. Obviously, we've increased the amount of funding that collectively we're putting into the homeless crisis. As the crisis has grown, so too the resources that we've put in. The real game changer, I think, has come forward in the form of the Metro measure, which people just supported. Now we'll have dollars for services that will go alongside the housing that the city is providing, that Metro provided both through their previous housing bonds. So those things have gone well. We've also learned that not everybody's gonna come to us. Not everybody wants to come inside to a shelter. Not everybody's gonna come inside to seek services. So we go to them. So we created the navigation teams, that are a partnership with the city, the county, TPI, Central City Concern, and others, where we actually send teams out into the field, into the homeless camps, and they build the trust. They build the relationships with people in the camps and help connect them to the services to get off the street. That has also been very effective. Where I think we, you know, what we didn't see coming on the other side of the ledger is the continued wealth disparities in our community and in our country. The wealthier continue to get even more wealthy and the poor are getting poorer. And that dynamic is creating a situation where more and more people are finding themselves unable to afford even basic housing or needs. So we need a compassionate response.
One of the things I think is difficult about this issue is managing public expectations. So when you came in, you had made it one of your priorities, as did several of your predecessors. So now that you kind of have your sea legs, in 4 years, what's something that you want to be able to look back and say, okay, this little bit of the issue is better than it was when I won my second term?
I think the flexibility that we're seeing now amongst all of the governments that are engaged, and frankly, we're seeing more governments engaged than we saw previously. It was really hard, ultimately, to create this partnership that includes Washington and Clackamas counties. And we've seen service providers being very successful and innovative in their approaches. We've seen the private sector come to the table in ways that we hadn't seen before. That the Navigation Center in Northwest Portland would not have happened without private sector support. The Bybee Lakes Treatment Center, I was really pleased to be a supporter and part of that effort. That's largely a private sector initiative. And that's going to help to start at least 100 people at a time gain access to substance abuse treatment, which is critically important for so many people on our streets. So the longer term, I want to continue to build the partnerships. I want to see us to continue to innovate around alternative camps, managed campsites, doing more around hygiene and cleanliness services. And we will probably even go in the direction of finding safe camp zones, places where people can go in the city, where they won't be at risk to themselves or to other people, where there won't be environmental consequences for people camping there or immediate safety issues for the people who are camping there. All of these innovations are on the table, and there's lots of people working really hard together in collaboration to make sure that we provide as many opportunities as possible to connect people to services to help them get off the streets.
Shortly after you were reelected, you made a statement about wanting to make a focus point of your next 4 years being to take people out of tents on the sidewalk and street and getting them into short-term and long-term housing. And some people in the homeless community thought that that statement lacked compassion. So explain to me how you walk that fine line of, on the one hand, sweeps are inhumane and lack compassion, but then on the other hand, having people sleeping, living, eating, using the restroom on the sidewalk is damaging for public health, small businesses, as well as property values. And so how do you walk that tightrope of satisfying both sides, which have very valid arguments?
Well, it's a both and. We're striking a balance between a thoughtful and compassionate approach to vulnerable people who are on our streets, while at the same time meeting the expectations of the broader community around safety, health, livability, and access. It's really about pairing our efforts to keep our city clean and livable and healthy with access to services for people on our streets who are truly vulnerable. And at the end of the day, by the time a camp is remediated, there's obviously been several systematic failures at the federal level, at the state level, at the local level. But I believe the approach that we have is as humane as possible. There's a team that goes and does an assessment. Sites are posted. We send social workers in, particularly for the larger camps, and try to connect people directly to services or to shelter or to other humane alternatives. We have been opening alternative shelters recently, in particular, and just in the last several weeks, we've identified 275 new shelter beds, and we're seeking additional sites even as we speak to help move people out of those camps where there truly are issues related to safety or environmental concerns or public health concerns.
You're mayor during a time when in the next 4 years, you have a lot of things on your plate, a lot of things that would take up 4 years just working on alone. I mean, namely COVID, police force, forest fires. Where does homelessness rank on these issues? Is it priority numero uno? Where is this?
Well, all of these things can be linked in one way or the other. I'll remind you, even during the forest fires, which didn't impact the city of Portland directly, we had horrific air quality. And so we scrambled to make sure that we had safe sites for people so they wouldn't be outside breathing that toxic air. So it's hard to pull these things apart. But of all the issues that you just described, the COVID crisis, the economic crisis, some of the issues around natural disasters, those problems are relatively short-term problems. Homelessness is a deeper societal and structural issue that has to do with economics. It has to do with our supply of housing. It has to do with our failure as a state and as a community to have rigorous social safety nets in place around mental health and substance abuse and domestic violence, survivorship, and other areas. And so we have this opportunity, I believe, to prioritize addressing the homeless crisis as really being an opportunity to rebuild our social safety nets and address some of the income disparity and economic opportunity problems that exist for a lot of people who live in our community.
Yeah. And
so, the answer to your question is, This is front and center. It's priority number one or two for sure. It's certainly the most fundamental. Before we had COVID, the homeless crisis was already horrific. So right. I would put it front and center.
And one thing you said there that's really interesting is how linked these are. And I think we're going to start seeing that even more when this issue, people are worried, and rightfully so, that this issue of homelessness in Portland and other cities will go from a problem that was, you know, for the bottom several percent of a city or for a population, that'll now turn into a lower middle class to middle class problem as people making middle class, lower middle class salaries are looking around and wondering where the rent check's coming from, and the moratorium on evictions will eventually, you know, go up. What do you say about being mayor during a time where we could potentially have 50,000 new people that are homeless, just like that?
I'm not daunted by the challenge, first of all. I accept the challenge, and these are the times that we're in. And I do believe that as a community, as a state and a nation, we can overcome the challenges. But it's multifaceted. As you point out, housing is a key part of this. So too is education and job training and access to economic prosperity for everyone in our community. And then for those folks who do end up on the streets, what are our compassionate responses to those individuals? And I'm really pleased with the work that the community has done in recent years around supporting not one, but two different housing bonds, which support low income and zero income housing. The community overwhelmingly supported the Here Together initiative, which now provides services that will be connected alongside that housing. That's a critical groundbreaking step in terms of beginning to rebuild our social safety nets in this community. And then in the short term, it's providing shelter and hygiene and sanitation and belonging storage, litter pickup, alternative shelters, safe zones, thinking innovatively how we can work with all of our partners in the community, whether it's service providers, nonprofits, private sector business organizations and leaders, philanthropic faith leaders. We're all coming together around this humanitarian crisis in a way that frankly makes me really proud to be the mayor of this community.
You're the first second-term mayor in a couple administrations. But as somebody who's been in endorsement meetings with you as you've gone through the election for the second term, something that I have heard you say is something you just said again, which was that you're ready to accept the challenge that the next 4 years faces you. Was there ever a time during the first 4 years where you were like, F this, I can get more done in the private sector. I can get more done for the community and private sector or another position. I'm going to try something else, not seek a second term.
I gave it long and hard thought about whether I was really the right person to continue to lead this city. And I believe every elected official, when they get to the end of their term, whether it's their first term or their 10th term, they should ask themselves, am I the right person at the right time for the challenges that this community faces? And I gave that considerable thought, and I not only concluded that I was energized and excited about the opportunity to continue to lead, I came to the conclusion that it was imperative that I run for re-election, that I stay in this role, that I stay the course, that I continue to build upon the partnerships and the relationships that we put into place, that we continue to do what we are doing on a whole host of our agenda items to continue to move this city forward. I think it's been very disruptive to Portland to have churning administrations, because then you break off those relationships, you have new leaders coming into the city bureaus, you have it's just very disruptive to the work at hand. And none of this is short-term work. It takes the dog work of leadership and governance to move these initiatives forward and really achieve the kind of results the community wants and expects from their elected leadership. So are there days when I'm frustrated? Sure, but you know, everybody who listens to this has those days. But I feel very privileged to serve in this capacity. I'm excited about it. I'm energized by it. I'm surrounded by great people. And there's no community in this country that I would rather be mayor of than Portland, Oregon. This is a great community. We're up against the ropes a little bit right now on a whole host of fronts, but we're going to get off those ropes and we're going to kick some ass and we're going to move this city forward. I know we will.
It's a great, great, very frank answer and a lot there that, that I think a lot of us can agree with. So now a question that everyone's wondering, how big was your blowout party after you won?
it was unfortunately very, very small, because we were, of course, in the throes of COVID. But I was here at home with my daughter. We watched some TV. We had a nice dinner together, and that was about it. But when we get through this, and we all know we will, I expect to do a redo on my part.
Awesome. Yeah, you passed the Newsom test. Very good. a quick side note there, Governor Newsom, if you're listening to this, which I'm almost certain you are, please, I'd love to have you on the podcast. Let's talk hair product, what you're using these days, and French laundry. Those are the two main things I want to talk about. Anyway, back to the interview. Let's end here with a little game that I want to play here. So this is called Hot Take. The way that it works is I'm going to give you three statements, and you tell me which one's the most likely and which one's the least likely.
Occur.
Number one, Portland will get a Major League Baseball team. Number two, I, Mayor Ted Wheeler, will one day run for governor. And number three, Damian Lillard will play for a team other than the Portland Trailblazers.
Oh boy, thanks a lot for setting me up. In terms of likely, MLB coming to Portland, I would say that is not only likely, I believe with the right cards being dealt, that could be highly likely. I would say the least likely of the three is Damian Lillard playing for a team other than the Portland Trail Blazers. He's true blue.
He really is. All right, Mr. Mayor, thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great rest of your day.
You too.
We end our show today with quote of the week. This week's comment comes from a mom talking about the importance of getting back to in-person classes for her children. She says, quote, "Adults don't have to touch things, children do. You can't touch a Zoom screen. When my son is learning to spell words, he has to move the little letters with his finger. That's not the same as touching a magnetic letter." I have read this line, folks, 15 times. I have no idea what it means. Does it mean that we need to be sending kids magnetic letters in order for them to learn? And honestly, I understand how important it is to get our kids back to school. I do. I'm taking Zoom classes. They suck, but I don't know. Maybe it was because I was homeschooled. I didn't use magnets to teach me the alphabet, and I'm fine. I mean, I know all 25 letters of the alphabet, so, you know, I just don't understand why this is like a top five reason why we need to be getting our kids back to school, but hey, who am I to judge? I'm so negative. Anyways, there you have it. Episode 7 in the books. Come back next week for episode 8 on the 20th. Happy Valentine's Day. And I am being told that there are 26 letters in the alphabet. So I guess I'm going magnet shopping today. Peace. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. For more information on this podcast or the biggest stories in Portland, go to wweek.com and follow Willamette Week on all socials. We're doing some really cool things related to the podcast on our Instagram and Twitter. Includes giveaways, behind the scenes, etc. A lot of cool things coming your way, so give those a follow. Special thanks to our guests for joining us, and thank you to Aaron Mesh, Mark Zussman, and Brian Pangamibon, as well as the entire Willamette Week family. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. This has been the Dive Podcast.